Kevin, not a ton of movement amongst goaltenders, but the Colorado Avalanche, everybody knew they needed a backup. They went and got a backup in Devan Dubnyk. When you look at fit and style, do you think he was the best choice for the Avalanche?
I don't know about best choice. I mean, like I said, past couple of weeks, my favorite choice, I think, probably actually didn't become available because they recognized how important he is to the Buffalo Sabres, was Linus Ullmark. So, but removing him as an option, or certainly as an option, because let's be honest, the teams that did acquire goaltenders, you know, they weren't paying the prices you would pay for a guy who could be a number one like a Linus Ullmark. This was, you know, pretty much depth move, both in terms of Dubnyk and Rittich. Yeah, not only would have been my first choice, but from a fit perspective, he checks some of the boxes. And, you know, most notably, he has been traded before. And I know that may seem like an odd thing to list as a reason, but there's sort of like a checklist of factors that, you know, let you know, at least give you indicators as to whether a goalie's going to be able to switch teams and adjust to, you know, new defensive philosophies, new styles, and whether he's done it before is one of them. Like Dubnyk, you know, he kind of was one of the poster children for this. In 2014, he got tossed around from Edmonton to Nashville to Montreal, where he ultimately ended up being a black ace and actually left the team early. So there's a case where, you know, he's traded for the first time, and he admitted he didn't really react well to it. He went to Nashville thinking, oh, I got to be Superman, and he tried to do everything. You know, a year later, he goes to Arizona as a reclamation project, plays so well that there's demand. He gets traded to Minnesota, and he fits like a glove there, and he has immediate success. And he'll be the first to tell you that it doesn't happen in 2015 in Minnesota if not for the fact he went through it and learned how to sort of handle that trade mentally in 2014. So that's one of the boxes, and he checks it. The other one, we talk about style, right? Like horses for courses in golf, there are styles of goaltender that fit certain systems. And listen, the Colorado Avalanche defensively are probably a good team for, you know, like any goaltender would want to play there. They are sneaky good defensively, a team that in the past has relied on goaltending maybe a little too much and been one that outscores its problems in net, is no longer, or its problems defensively is no longer that. Like, they are a much better defensive team. They're top 10 in most defensive categories. There's a fit there in terms of strengths and weaknesses, style of shots that they give up compared to some of Dubnyk's strengths, especially on the rush. He's not necessarily a great rush goaltender. Like, if you put him in settled end zone play, that's where he's at his best, and they're not a team that gives up a lot off the rush. They're sort of 10th in the NHL in expected goals off the rush, so a top 10 team in that regard. So I do see a bit of a fit there. I think he's a mature enough guy, and he's been around enough that he'll be able to sort of figure out how to fit in, both in terms of the room, but also within the system, adjusting to the way guys play and, you know, reading off of guys in that manner. So would he be my first choice? Maybe not. But there are elements of fit here that I like for him there, maybe above sort of some of the other options that were available to him. I said last week, I like Bernier there because he was comfortable there. He knew the goalie coach, he knew all those elements, and it would have been an easy adjustment at a time when there isn't a lot of sort of window to make that adjustment. But as you go down the list of options, Dubnyk fits a lot of those checks a lot of those boxes.
When I hear the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs saying that Frederik Andersen can resume playing when he feels comfortable with it, I interpret that he's got something that might be lingering, and he's got to be able to just figure out how to manage that pain or manage the injury. I'm not going to say you're saying that, but, you know, when they add another goalie, now they're four deep there with Toronto. Is there reason for concern maybe with where that whatever it is with Freddie Andersen is heading?
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as you saw that trade, I think a lot of people wondered whether whether he would be back for them. I know Kyle Dubas said that they expect him to play again for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but none of this is like he's right around the corner. He's coming back. He's been out for now, 3 weeks? Hasn't been on the ice at all. So, yeah, it's tough, right? Like, it's a fine line, right? For any player, between sort of being the guy that, you know, always wants to stay in there and being a guy who's going to play hurt to the point where your play suffers and you're not actually helping your team. Like, when Jack Campbell wasn't healthy enough to play, and Freddie Anderson was clearly playing for an through an injury, and continued to go out there and try and play through it, and wasn't playing well, all he got was ripped for his level of play. But now that he's out, to imply that he just needs to maybe play through it, I don't get that. I mean, Matt Murray's going through this in Ottawa, right? Like, we keep hearing how the coaching staff wasn't happy that he pulled himself out of that start against the Leafs in the warm-up. Well, I mean, maybe they want to hire a team doctor that doesn't pinch a nerve in his neck while treating his neck and cause him to lose feeling in his glove hand, and they wouldn't have that problem. But so I always, you know, like, we hear it in Arizona. Antti Raanta, not a guy that plays through a lot, right? Like, there's sort of, you've heard that from the coach there, where there's frustration that he's always hurt. And then you go to the other end of the spectrum, and Jacob Markstrom will play through anything, but again, to the point where it can become a problem, because he'll keep playing and keep playing until it's an injury that he can't play through and he's out for long term. So I always have trouble with sort of those implications, and sort of that, you know, hey, you just got to play through it. Because especially when it comes to goaltending, like, if you can't move out there, you can't play. And you know, if you've got doubts in the back of your mind about the level you're functioning at, it's kind of hard to play through it. So, like, there is an element of, you know, just grind through it. Dubnyk's a guy who's done it, like, played through. I remember once he took a pressure cut on his thumb through the blocker, and the bone was, like, showing. And, like, 2 days later, Darcy Kemper went down with – took a shot and had a head injury, and Dubnyk played through that. So there are varying degrees to it, but I just think, especially when you get into, you know, if it's a potential of lower body and things that affect movement, that's a tough ask for a goaltender. So it's a tough one, right? I'm on the fence here, right? Like, it matters, but at the same time, I can't rip anyone for not playing through something, because you don't know how much it's affecting them.
Taking a look at the world of a goaltender with In Goal Magazine's Kevin Woodley. Jack Campbell's on a heater. Is this just him finally developing? Is the team playing well? What are you seeing from Soupy Campbell here?
Well, I mean, he's playing well, no question. He also got bailed out the other night. Like, nice when you can extend your – when you can give up five and still extend your historic win streak. That always helps. You know, and certainly playing behind a team like – Toronto, that gives you that margin for error, like, that matters. You know, like, that, we've had this conversation before, right? Like, what's the toughest thing for a goaltender? Do you want to be on a team that can score tons of goals that's maybe a little loose defensively, or would you rather be on a team that's super tight defensively, but you know one might be one too many because they can't score? And it's always sort of, every goalie is going to tell you they want to play behind a team that can score, and so they feel like they're going to bail them out every once in a while. So that helps. You know, we talked about this last week with Jason. Like, I think for Jack Campbell, the biggest thing in his career that's sort of gotten him to this point wasn't so much a skill thing as it was a mindset thing. And a lot of that started in L.A. with Dusty Emu, and sort of rebuilding his confidence in Texas. It was shattered in part because, you know, he had attached so much of his identity as a person to his ability to perform as a goaltender, and when the performance slipped, so did sort of a lot of his self-belief. And Dusty Emu, the goalie coach with the Los Angeles Kings, their development coach, played a big role in sort of rebuilding that. And it, you know, right down to his equipment, right? Like, right down to his equipment. He wears a pad, a Vaughn pad, that's very much like Jonathan Quick. Like, you and I could go into the locker room and grab that pad and sort of grab it like an accordion and squeeze it till it was about half its size, like super soft, flexible pad. A lot of today's pads are like so rigid, guys, that we could, if you put it on the ground and were to try and flex it, it would barely move at all. And when he was with the Dallas Stars, they asked him to change pads to a more stiff, rigid brand of pad away from what he was used to. And you're probably going, what the hell is he talking about? Why does this matter? Because it's almost part of our identity as a goaltender. Like, Jack Campbell saw himself as this sort of, not Jonathan Quick-esque, but there's a style of goaltender, there's a sort of feel and fit to the pad, there's a sort of mindset that comes with playing in that style of pad. And it sort of fits a different style of goaltending, a different style of goaltender. And so asking him, as simple as sort of insisting that he switch brands of pads, in some ways was taking away part of the identity of who Jack Campbell saw himself as a goaltender, and that was part of a slippery slope down to the point where Jack Campbell's sort of self-worth and self-identity and how he felt about himself and ability to play the position hit rock bottom with the Dallas Stars. So it can be something as simple as that can be a part of, you know, that type of downward slide. And it got pretty low, and rebuilding that, one of the first things that Dusty Emu did was said, hey, let's get back to the pads you used to wear. Like, why do you wear this? Like, let's get back to the stuff you felt good in, the stuff that you felt good about playing in. And so for him, you know, a lot of it is sort of the mindset. There's obviously a technical element and a skill element, but the skill's always been there, right? He was an 11th overall pick. It was getting him to believe that those things could still apply in the NHL and that he didn't have to, you know, absolutely kill himself, beat himself up every time he failed, you know, to make them apply, that he was more than just the goaltender. That's when you saw that confidence start to get rebuilt.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins us. So, Kevin, as you move ahead now for the, you know, into the stretch run, you look at teams. What do you make of the Washington Capitals, man? They got two young goaltenders, but both have played well. Who do you think right now would be their starter?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I would have said Samsonov as he was just coming back and he started to have early success, but he's kind of run into some inconsistencies himself, and Vanacek's doing what he's doing, you know, at times without numbers that really jump off the chart either. You know what I mean? Like, he's, you know, I talked about run support, like he's winning, but, you know, not with numbers that, you know, would have him in any award conversations. And I think at the end of the day, that's part of what's going on here. Like, this is not a team that is necessarily going to win or lose based on goaltending, and they didn't see an opportunity to, you know, that's why they took the Henrik Lundqvist flyer. And there was no Henrik Lundqvist available out there in terms of someone coming in and being able to give you that level of goaltending. Like, so they view it much like, you know, much like, hey, Jonathan Bernier's got a ton of experience, but they don't see any more upside there, for example, as a guy that they could have brought in a trade, than what they've got in Vanacek and Samsonov. And Samsonov certainly has a lot more upside. So I think, to me, this is a bet on what they have and what they've worked on and worked with for the past couple of years. And I told you guys this going into the season, that the goaltending department this year, before Lundqvist became available, and that was, you know, obviously that's a very unique circumstance. But before he became available, the recommendation was, let's stick with what we've got. Like, that they believed internally that Samsonov and Vanacek could get this job done. And Phoenix Copley, like, we sort of forget about him, but he's, you know, he has the ability to play in the National Hockey League, and that they felt like they'd put all this work into these guys, they developed them, and that they were ready for this opportunity, and they didn't need help from the outside. And that goes back to, right back to free agency. Lundqvist was unique, so they jumped on that opportunity. I mean, kind of hard not to at that price. But when you look around what was available sort of in the trade market, the same thing wasn't out there. And it was going to cost you more than just a contract. So again, just doubling down on what the goalie department was telling them as far back as the offseason. We believe in what we've got here.
When you look at the Florida Panthers and their kind of three-headed good problem to have, right, with Dreger, Nice, and Nice, Knight, and Barakowski, those three guys, is it clear who will be the starter kind of down the stretch here, for in your opinion?
I mean, can you leave a $10 million contract on the bench?
I hear you, man. That's like, a good question.
Honestly.
It's a good question.
Can you, like?
I agree.
Like, it's really hard, right? And, like, I saw Chris, and at the same time, I saw Chris Driedger's name come up a bunch on the, you know, sort of trade talk today as a guy that maybe other teams would look at. And, you know, listen, like, I don't know that Chris Driedger's future is in Florida, obviously, because they have Bobrovsky and they have Spencer Knight coming. And he's an unrestricted free agency who just, you know, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He happens to, what, lead the league right now with a .931 save percentage. So I don't think they can afford for him to be in their long-term plans, because he's going to command more than they can afford to pay with what Bob's making. But you don't walk away from, unless somebody's offering you a first-round pick, you're not walking away from Chris Driedger and the insurance policy he provides this season. Because while I kind of stick with that statement that you're probably not starting anyone other than Bob in the playoffs, at least out of the gate. This is a team that's had a hell of a year. And Bobrovsky has missed some time during it to injury for starters, and we've seen other teams add goaltending depth just in case of injury with Colorado and even Toronto adding Riddick. So why would the Panthers, if they see themselves as a contender, give away that depth unless they're getting something significant back? And when that depth guy happens to lead the league in save percentage, even more of a why would you do this kind of thing. So I'm not surprised they kept Chris as sort of a plan B. Knight, to me, he may be ready for the NHL. But that's still a question and not something, again, where if you see this team as having a shot this year, I'm not sure it's a risk you want to take at this point. So I'm not surprised they hung on to both of them. I still think it's Bob coming out of the gate in the playoffs, maybe with a shorter leash than he had last year. And the one caveat on Driedger, and I've given this one to you guys before, he is a great story. Sort of that late bloomer who figured some things out after, being just 2 years ago as far down as the East Coast Hockey League. But the adjusted numbers would tell you that he is getting a lot of help and that, well, he may lead the league in raw save percentage. From a shot quality perspective, when you weigh it against that, he's not in the top 10. So if I'm Florida and I've got Knight and I've got these guys coming in, I'm happy to keep him as an insurance policy because the team plays really well in front of him, and that matters. Like, for whatever reason, they play well for this guy. But at the same time, I'm not going to be the one that overpays him because I need to recognize also that, when he's winning, it's not just about the way he's playing. That same sort of impact of the defensive play in front of him is contributing greatly.
Woodley, great stuff, man. We'll talk to you next Monday. Have a good week.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, guys.